All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a chief warrant officer in 1969, actually, in the United States Army. Flew helicopters, Hueys, UH-1s, and made it home. Yay for me. It's great to be here to talk to you all. We're going to be talking about benefits today. So we want to encourage you out there, if you're listening, to give us a call if you have a question about your VA benefits. Hopefully we'll be able to answer. We've got our expert here, Michael Smith, with the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office. And also my other guest today, we're going to be talking about the Veterans Choice Program. And I think that that's something that we all think is very interesting and very important. And that is Scott Brooks Miller. And Scott is a former Marine. No, I guess he's a Marine all the time. I understand that. He's nodding over there. I think he's going to hurt me. But Scott is here to talk about the Veterans Choice Program and also some of the things that are going on at the VA. And I think that those are things that we can really, it's important for us to talk about those. There's a lot of changes coming around, it sounds like. Michael, how are you doing this week?
Doing real good. Just got back from my first ever visit to the Big Island to see my little brother and sister who've been there for 19 years. And I'm feeling very relaxed.
Very relaxed.
Yes, sir.
The Big Island as in Hawaii?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
I thought he meant Long Island.
I wasn't. Or Mackinac Island. I wasn't sure. It's a good time to go up there. Yeah, I was in Hawaii, again, in 1969. But I was on Oahu, and Oahu, it was fun. Met my wife there, still my wife, which is awesome compared to some of the other people I've been talking to recently that 50 years ago. It was a great place. It's beautiful. Isn't that beautiful?
It's gorgeous. Yes, absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, the skies were just amazing, and the color of this ocean out there. Well, all right, for all of you that are living in Michigan right now and had to scrape a little snow and ice off of your car again today, it's getting a little bit, you know, tedious, I guess would be the word. But I should give you the phone number, and I want to make sure I do that. If you do have a question, give us a call at 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. We're coming to you from the studios of WAAM here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I just wanted to give them a little promo also. As you know, most of you probably are listening on AM radio, but they also have an FM station now, and that's WAAM FM, and that's 92.7. It's 92.7. So those of you that live a little bit further out, you might be able to pick up the signal a little bit better on your FM radio. And so we're excited for them. I also want to remind you that we are being brought to you by Legal Help for Veterans, which is an organization specializing only in veterans' disability claims. And if you want to get more information about Legal Help, go to 800-693-4800. That's 800-693-4800. And also by our good friends down in Ohio, U.S. Wings, the home of the finest leather flight jackets in the world, according to Sergeant David Hack. And their phone number is 800-650-0659. 800-650-0659. And for all of you that are listening that entered our little contest to win a U.S. Wings Golf Buffalo Cape Buffalo leather jacket, we're going to be announcing the winners at the end of the program today. It's called, you know, I got to keep you around. And so we want to thank, it looks like we have over 150 people that have sent in requests. That number is climbing every month now, and it's really exciting for us here on Veterans Radio to know how many people are out there and where you are. I was talking with Scott earlier and just going through the list of the towns that, you know, they're all over the country. It's really exciting for us to know that you are listening. And I'd be neglectful if I forgot about the VBA, Charles S. Kettles Post 310, for sponsoring Veterans Radio, along with VFW Graft O'Hara Post 423, and finally the American Legion, Irwin Prescorn Post number 46. All three of these organizations are from the Ann Arbor area, and we want to thank them for their continuing support. Without your sponsorships and your support, Veterans Radio wouldn't be on the air. So we want to thank you all very much. In fact, If you'd like to sponsor Veterans Radio, you are more than welcome to. You could give me a call directly at Veterans Radio at 734-646-8673, or you can go to our website, veteransradio.net, and click on sponsorship opportunities, I think is what we've got up there. It sounds pretty good to me, right? So we're going to take a real quick break for one of our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to hopefully answer your questions about benefits and find out more about this Veterans Choice thing and what's some of the plans that we are, rumors that we are hearing about what's going on with the VA. So stick around. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we are talking benefits today. And I guess I'll ask Michael. Michael Smith is the executive director of the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office. Is there anything that we need to be aware of with that's going on out there in the world of veterans benefits, disability benefits?
One of the things that we're keeping a very close eye on is the recent Federal Circuit Court of Appeals decision in Wilkie versus Procopio, which basically the court sided with all of our Blue Water Navy veterans in saying that they should be extended the presumption of exposure to herbicides because they, under the law, did serve in the Republic of Vietnam as the law writes, because the court interpreted that the territorial waters around any landmass is included in any definition of a particular country. Mm-hmm. So that's the short and sweet of that decision. But the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs has a 90-day window in which they have to appeal that decision to the Supreme Court. And there's two outcomes here. One, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs could choose not to appeal it, or they could appeal it and the U.S. Supreme Court can choose not to hear the case. We just read an article the other day in Military Times. You mentioned mm-hmm. that earlier, that a publication. And there was an article there that quoted Secretary Wilkie as saying that at this point he does not believe the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is going to appeal that decision, which mm-hmm. means that it will be a precedent-setting decision and it will have basically the effect of law on the agency to begin to prosecute claims for our 90,000-plus Blue Water Navy veterans and probably an untold number of surviving spouses of those Blue Water Navy veterans who may have succumbed to death as a result of one of those nasty little diseases that seems to be associated with that exposure.
That stuff seems to be everywhere. Everywhere. I just wrote down here, I was thinking about C-123s that the Air Force transported the Agent Orange barrels and everything in and sprayed out of them and so forth, that they're now actually going to allow those people to apply for benefits as well. I mean, those guys were, you know, we think we were doused in it while we were in Vietnam and so forth.
Well, it's also the 123s that came back to the United States and mm-hmm. subsequent crews, air crews on those 23s and also some 130s, mm-hmm. There was still residue of dioxin in those aircraft, and veterans who never went overseas were exposed to Agent Orange.
Right.
Exactly. And many of those birds were given to U.S. Air Force Reserve units. And so those U.S. Air Force Reserve folks would go to drill weekend and go to their annual training. And basically the residuals of that herbicide, it was so strong and those birds that it was years afterwards that it was continuing to contaminate people.
You'd think that somebody would have washed these things out. Somewhat along the
not,
line.
Not the way they needed to be washed.
No, I don't
they
think so.
They need to be steam cleaned and then steam cleaned again.
I don't mean to laugh about that because it's serious. I mean, you would think that, you know, this is 50 years ago that these aircraft were used, and probably some of them are still in service. And these poor guys in the reserves are coming down with the symptoms and so forth of exposure, and they're going, what is this all about? And we'll get into this in a second, though. I can't imagine going to their civilian doctors and they're going, well, when do you think you were exposed to anything? Well, no. I've only been in the reserves, using my little Roundup. Did I say Roundup?
Yeah, you did say Roundup.
I thought I did, because the stuff is still out there. But anyway, We've got some questions. Again, this is our benefits program. We want to talk about the VA, all things VA. If you would like to get in on the conversation, please give us a call at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. We had a couple of questions that were emailed to us this week, and I guess one of them, I'm not familiar with all the terminology like you are, Michael, but I got one here from George Benham. George says that I'm a Vietnam veteran, 78 years old, with 50% disability for CRSC. What is that?
CRSC is combat-related special compensation. It's basically paid to retired members of the armed forces who have disability compensation coming to them from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, but then their disability compensation is offset, or it offsets their retired pay. And if there's an offset, their branch of service can pay them back that same amount of money that's being offset or close to it if they have disabilities that their branch of service is considered combat related. And that's a little bit of a misnomer in terms of that name, because the combat codes for combat related special compensations includes actual combat, but then there's also simulation of war, which is another code. Then there's instrumentality of war. Then there is hazardous duty, and then there's Agent Orange, and then there's mustard gas. So if any of your disabilities were caused by any one of those specific type of combat codes, you can submit an application for combat related special compensation to your branch of service. And in most cases, the exact amount of offset to your retired pay is paid directly back to you in that same amount. And then they use the VA's pay scale to do that.
Okay, because he said that he's also unemployable due to his age, because he's 78. He has a 10% disability for hearing. And his question was, am I eligible for additional compensation due to my age and unemployment status?
So the VA pays a benefit called total disability based on individual unemployability, TDIU, or we just refer to it in the short term as IU, or individual unemployability. Individual unemployability requires several scheduler things to be going on with veterans in order for them to even consider that benefit. One, they have to have a combined evaluation of 70, 80, or 90% with one disability rated at 40% by itself, or one disability rated at 60, and that includes a bodily system. So if, say, for instance, I had a gentleman who's all of his disabilities, 20% here, 40% there, another 10% there, was all related to the musculoskeletal system. So because his combined evaluation was 60, the VA would accept that one 60% rating as a one disability rated at 60. So you can have one disability rated at 60 or a bodily system rated at 60. And the VA will look at whether or not those disabilities at a combined 70, 80, or 90, or that one disability rated at 60, impacts your ability to obtain and maintain what's called substantially gainful employment. And if those disabilities do that, then the VA will pay the 100% rate based on IU. So his evaluation right now doesn't appear to be high enough for the consideration of IU, not unless the 50% for CRSC, he's also getting 50% disability compensation, and maybe with a 10, he might be at a combined 60. The VA does not pay that benefit based on your employment status or your retired status or your age or for any other disabilities that may be preventing you from employment.
Okay.
It's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot to take in. George, I hope you're listening. Hopefully either Michael or General Falzone, who is also one of our disability experts, I forwarded your email to them, and hopefully somebody can get to you and see if there's more that we need to know before we can offer a final different thing. Here's a poor guy. I think I've been with this one. I am receiving a disability for hearing loss. I put in another claim because my hearing's gotten much worse. I filed in September of 2018, have not heard anything yet. It says a rep is looking at my claim. Why does it take so long? I waited 12 years before I was awarded my disability.
To be honest with you, a claim for increase, that's a little bit long for a claim for increase to be processed. The one thing the VA's already got is the baseline, And the only thing that they would need is an additional examination to determine if the disability has in fact gotten worse, requesting treatment records. Now, I don't know if this person is getting the prosthetic devices, hearing aids, or getting treatment for hearing loss at the VA facility. If it's through a civilian, then there may be some time that the VA is required to go to those civilian doctors and request those mm-hmm. records. And that's one of the things that we as county veteran service officers and other service officers involved in the business, we try to mitigate the back and forth between the VA and private physicians and regarding records. We mm-hmm. typically will give copies of those records to the VA when we request a claim be reopened for an increase. The reason why is if you tell the VA, oh, I'm getting treated by MOSA or I'm getting treated by this audiologist over here, the VA will then write that audiologist a letter, give them 60 days to respond. If they don't, then they send them another letter, give them another 30 days to respond. So now you're looking at 90 days just for the VA to get records so that they can verify that, in fact, a disability has gotten worse. And then they're also required to schedule the veteran for an examination to determine if, again, that disability or disabilities have gotten worse. I would encourage this person, if they're not working with a service organization, to try to get a representative involved so that they can do their advocacy role. Mm-hmm. If you engage the VA on your own, sometimes there are things that are going on in the back and forth dance between us and the VA that many times veterans will miss and think that things are being processed, but the VA's may be asking for records, they're asking for additional mm-hmm. information, and if a veteran doesn't respond, then it can delay a claim.
Does the e-benefits electronic thing that we've got there that we can access, does that tell you where your claim is in the process or what they're waiting for?
It does, but I'll be honest with you. I think I'm a little spoiled because we have access to the VA computing systems as accredited mm-hmm. representatives. So I can look into the Veterans Benefits Management System and see exactly where that claim is, who has it, the name of the person who has it, and what stage it's in. And I've oftentimes had veterans call me and say, hey, look, I looked in my e-benefits account, and it says this. And I look in VBMS, and it's totally different. So I really... don't want to bash e-benefits because it has its good points, but I don't find it as to be as updated mm-hmm. And as informative to veterans as, say, for instance, the Veterans Benefits Management System that we have access to.
Okay. All right. We do have a caller on the line I'd like to bring on right now. He's Andy from Georgia, and Andy has a question about veterans training money. Andy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What can we do for you?
I was, I train air conditioning technicians, entry level type training, to give them basic skills mm-hmm. so they can, kind of get on board with the heating and air industry with companies. And, I am not certified. My company's not certified. I've already looked at all the requirements to get certified. My question is, my class costs $6,000, let's say.
Okay.
And is there a way for a veteran to use, I thought I read where they could use a certain amount of money for non-certified training sources?
I'm not aware of that. Well, let me see. Do you know anything about that?
So I do know that any training or retraining programs that veterans engage to using their Montgomery GI Bill, their post 9/11 GI Bill, and now the Forever GI Bill, those institutions have to be accredited by the VA or recognized by the VA in order for those persons to use their benefits for those purposes.
Okay, so there's no extraneous money that you can use outside for a class you want to take that's not certified?
Well,
yeah, and they had an example of a guy who was trying to get some special underwater scuba welding training or something like that, and the school was so specialized that he made a case, the veteran made a case to where that was accepted for his case.
Oh, so it was the only option for him.
So that would be a voc rehab question. That would be
okay.
You would go to a voc rehab specialist for that.
Okay, and where would we find?
Well, they have one at the VA here in Ann Arbor. Any VMAC should have a voc rehab specialist or regional office.
So there is a vocational rehabilitation and employment or VRNE office at the Detroit regional office and all the regional offices. He's in Georgia. They would be at the Atlanta regional office. I will say you're right. There are some exceptions when it comes to vocational rehabilitation. So because vocational rehabilitation is more an employment program than it is an education, the education is to facilitate the rehabilitation, right, so that the person can get the training that they need for whatever endeavor it is that they want to do as far as a career or work. And yes, there are some, like in this instance, if this is the only option for that person to go to, then a vocational rehabilitation specialist can approve the person to attend there, and then that person will continue to get their whereas with a GI Bill or post 9/11 GI Bill, they pay the institution directly.
Directly,
so
yeah.
they do require them to be accredited. But with vocational rehabilitation, they're paying the veteran.
Okay.
And they're paying the veteran's courses. And again, if that is approved by a voc rehab specialist, then I can see that that's probably the way it was done.
They'll buy equipment. Depending what you're doing,
tools,
laptops, what's ever necessary to fulfill that mission.
Okay. Well, Andy, I think probably your next step would go to contact the regional office down there in Atlanta.
Yeah, I sure will, because we had a resource in our industry company that was approved called Retail Ready.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all are familiar with that, but it kind of got shut down, and there was a lot of, the trades industry is starving for people.
Right.
And so we're just trying to be a little part of the solution. Thanks
for
your help, guys.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
Good luck.
All right. Wow. All right. We got, 5 minutes? Okay. I want to come back over here and as we said, with Scott Brooks Miller here and talk just a little bit about the Veterans Choice Program before we have to take a break. So if you could explain to our audience, our civilian part of the audience, and probably most of the veterans, we don't understand what this choice is that's out there for us,
well,
or what's being proposed.
Choice came about 8 years ago to cover veterans' expenses in places that are basically remote. And I think the premise was is that if the VA couldn't schedule you for a specific appointment or procedure within 30 days, you could go to an outside provider. If it was so many miles away, like if, give you an example, I lived in Illinois and the closest VA veterans hospital was Iowa City. It was 152 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
They could pay for you to go to a private provider. It was thought up very quickly, and it was poorly construed. It was very confusing, and the billing process was literally a nightmare. In fact, some veterans their accounts were being turned over to collection agencies. They revamped the program 2 years ago. This is 2016, 2017. The new choice program, it's much more succinct, much, much better managed. The VA can provide, when the VA can't provide a veteran's needs, and like he can't get an appointment within 30 days, or he lives more than 40 miles away from a medical facility with a full-time primary care doctor, if the veteran has to travel by airplane, by boat, or ferry to the nearest VA facility, then you can go to an outside provider. And I just want to say this very, very clearly. That all has to be coordinated through the VA. And it actually, the VA is the agency that's paying these bills. Before it was a third party, and it was the first go around of choice was just a living nightmare. I want to use profanity so badly when I talk about that.
But not here.
I know. I'm, and I apologize. it has evolved into a very proficient program. You know, you can go, again, it's all verified and coordinated through the VA. They will pay you mileage to this provider. If that provider wants to give you a prescription, you can pick up a 14-day supply of drugs, and the VA will pay for that through a private pharmacy, and then the prescription will be transferred to the VA for subsequent fulfillments. You know, it's much, much improved, and all the bills, including your co-payments, if you do have a co-pay responsibility, will be billed by the VA. Outside providers, hospitals, doctor's offices, they will not be billing you. Whereas before, you were being
billed direct.
Right.
And, you know, well, we're coming up on a break here at the bottom of the hour. When we come around to the other side, I want Scott to talk about what he sees as some potential changes in the VA coming up in the next couple of years or the next couple of months. Who knows what's going to happen. We're still going to be answering your question about benefits. So if you do have one, please give us a call here on Veterans Radio, 734-822-1600. We'll be right back after the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're talking veterans benefits, mostly disability benefits, but we're also talking about the Veterans Choice Program and what may be going on with the future of the VA with the idea of the privatization. That's a tough word to say sometimes.
It can be.
That's a tough word to get out when you don't want to really say it because of what's happening. But I did have a disability question I just wanted to throw out there. This is from a disabled Army and Navy veteran, it says. This is for Stephen. And Stephen says, I'm 70% disabled, but he doesn't show what it's for. I had three hearing CNPs. First was not so good. The last two were favorable. This has been going on for 2 years. He doesn't have a nice thing to say about the e-benefits page either. What is a CNP?
So CNP is a compensation and pension examination. It's typically provided by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in conjunction with a claim. The fact that he's had three of them is, again, without more information, it's kind of difficult to respond to these statements. But I know claims typically should not last 2 years.
No.
With the exception of maybe one of the examinations wasn't good, the VA maybe had looked at it and felt like there was not enough information there for rating purposes, ordered another examination, and each time an examination is ordered, they give the provider 30 days to schedule the examination, conduct the examination, and get the examination results back to the Veterans Benefits Administration for rating purposes. I can see that three compensation and pension examinations may be indicative of the long delay, but I would hope that at some point the last examination that was done is going to be used for rating purposes, and hopefully this claim will get rated soon and the veteran notified of the decision.
I think the other thing, as we always tell them, is that they need you should get yourself associated with some veteran service officer somewhere. You need to have an advocate because not that the VA is not going to pay attention to you on your own, but I think that you're going to find that an advocate is going to have a much better time and an easier way of getting through because they have secret channels that they know about.
Well, you know, in Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs, although I'm the director, I'm still an accredited county veteran service officer, and then I have three others in my office. Mm-hmm. We all four of us have access to the Veterans Benefits Management System. We are literally in there every day looking at where are our claims? Mm-hmm. What stage are they? And there have been instances. I'll give you one instance. One of my veterans had just gotten all of her examinations done, and now it's time for the claim to be rated. It goes to a veteran service representative at the Atlanta regional office, and I see the gentleman's name, and he changed the status of the claim from ready for decision back to open, which means that he didn't feel that all the development activities had been done. He wrote a deferral, and I read the deferral. And in the deferral, he said the examiner did not provide an opinion about whether or not the stress fracture of the hip was related to service. Actually, the examining official did, wrote a very specific opinion about that disability. So I emailed this VA employee. I kindly pointed out to him what page the opinion was on, and he wrote me back. He says, you know, you're right. But the thing is she didn't write it in the verbiage that we use for rating purposes. He said, but it is the opinion. He says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change this back to ready for decision, and I'll have this claim rated today. And he did. And it was favorable.
That's even better.
So it's that kind of advocacy that a veteran service organization, service officer, whether it's the VFW, the American Legion, we all have access to the Veterans Benefits Management System. Mm-hmm. We all use it to monitor the status of our claims because they're getting moved around electronically in the national work queue. It could be established in San Diego. It can be the development can go on at Waco. It can be moved to Atlanta for rating. It could go down to St. Petersburg, Florida for promulgation and award generation. So we want to try to keep track of these claims, where they are and how they're moving. We used to say, Mark, you mentioned my former director, Mark Linke. Mark Linke used to say, we're just trying to find out where it's moving in the snake. As it's going through the snake. Is it at the beginning of the snake, in the middle of the snake, or at the end? And with that kind of advocacy, you won't see these kinds of delays in claims.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, to our audience out there, we would really like to know who your veteran service officers are out there across the country, especially if you have one that you think is especially effective, like Mike Smith here is in Washtenaw County, because we'd like to put together, our own little clearing list so that we can refer you to a veteran service officer, maybe where you are across the country. I mean, I'm not sure where our emails came from today, but as I mentioned earlier, you know, we're getting contacts from all over the country. And so if we could put together a list of a great person out in California or Oregon or Missouri or Florida or Pennsylvania, we would be more than happy to help you folks out when you ask us these questions. All right. So I'm going back to you, Scott, on the, what's going on in the VA that you're not pleased with, I can tell.
Well, no, actually.
And keep it clean.
I was a Marine. This VA here in Ann Arbor is truly an exceptional VA medical center. I have been to VAs all across the United States. I spent most of my career in the West, a little bit in the East, here in Michigan, Illinois, Iowa. And this VA is a dream. Mm-hmm. With a couple of very small exceptions. But there are some bad VAs, and it's not the people that work in them. It's just the facilities themselves. They're old and they're outdated. And so every 2 years, the Congressional Budget Office comes up with ways to trim the budget. This most recent go-around, which is just published in the VFW magazine in the April issue, they were talking about ways to cut the budget through benefit reductions. They addressed taxing disability payments, which are non-taxable right now. They have talked for years about just cutting out individual unemployability. The other thing that I saw this year that I'd never seen before is subtracting Social Security from individual unemployability. So
what you're saying with that is if you're 100% unemployable and so forth, you get about what? I mean, depending on your
marital situation.
Well,
if you're single, you're getting about $3,100 a month.
Right, so you're about $3,100.
Right.
Let's suppose that your Social Security is $1,500 a month.
Right.
They want to subtract. So theoretically, if you got both of them, you'd get $4,500 bucks a month.
Right, but they're going to subtract $1,500.
But they want to subtract the Social Security. Okay.
Right.
And then make the whole thing taxable?
Right.
Well, that'll work. And
potentially, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not
– Again, I'm saying this will never make it out of committee.
Right.
Out of the House Ways and Means Committee or the Veterans Affairs Committee. But it's – this year they came up with new ideas that are even scarier than ideas in previous years. The other thing that's happening sort of is this notion of privatizing the VA. That's actually not – so sort of. There is a very conscious effort to privatize the VA. Mm-hmm. They say that they can save $100 billion a year, but then it'll cost more than $100 billion a year to provide those services on the outside. I can tell you succinctly, and this is the reason why I was praising the Ann Arbor VA, you cannot beat the service here. We're associated with the University of Michigan. We have access to some of the best medical people in the nation. A lot of VAs, like Hines in Chicago, is associated with Loyola. University of Illinois is associated with Peoria, or the medical school in Peoria. Omar Bradley, when he was Secretary of the VA after World War II, was trying to put VAs next to medical schools. Mm-hmm. And that's a great idea, but there's some VAs that were built before then. And I know from my own very own experience, like when I hurt my wrist climbing in South Dakota and I had to go to the VA in Hot Springs, South Dakota, the people were nice, but this facility was ancient, it was dirty, it was decrepit, it should just be closed down, torn up. Mm-hmm. Now, the VA has made some unique partnerships with the Department of Defense. If you go to North Chicago, North Chicago in Illinois, the VA hospital there is directly aligned with the Naval Hospital. So it's not called a VA and it's not called a post hospital. It's a medical facility. Mm-hmm. And that's happened in different places throughout the country. El Paso does that. And I know there's others. I'm just blocking them out because I'm not used to being put on the spot. Mm. But anyway, it's hard, you know. And we have veterans. I mean, like the whole state of New Hampshire, you can use choice unless you're within a 20-mile radius of White River Junction, mm-hmm. New Hampshire. Or Vermont, you go to private provider. The problem comes in is that VA doctors are trained to work with veterans, and veterans have a unique set of ailments onto veterans themselves. You know, Agent Orange, PTSD, traumatic brain injuries. I still have a rotten foot from 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And if I'm in Chillicothe, Illinois, or Bemidji, Minnesota, and I have to go to a private care doctor, he's going to be clueless. A primary care doctor in Ann Arbor, just from talking to a veteran, can make an initial determination that they might have a mental health issue, a TBI or PTSD, and can make that referral to mental health. A healthcare provider who has never worked with veterans or didn't do any residency at the VA, they're going to be clueless and they're going to be more of a hindrance than a help. So dumping all these veterans onto the private sector is not a good answer. I think other ideas have to be looked at, you know, maybe taking VA doctors and putting them, instead of creating a whole new CBOC, a community-based outpatient clinic, you could put one or two or three, depending on your veteran population, in association with the hospital, where the veteran could go as an inpatient or to a clinic where they have VA doctors that can treat the veterans.
I was just going to say, it's sort of like there's another local hospital here that has a special senior emergency room, strictly for seniors.
Because
so you might have...
The issues are different.
Yeah. Well, yes. And so if we were to take a VA-trained doctor, and I'm not... I'm going to have to get them in here and talk about their training, maybe. But the idea is to see, to get a special VA team that could be out in Bemidji or...
Chillicothe.
Or wherever.
Right.
You know, Nowhereville. And I'm not going to name a state because there's plenty of those.
Well, let's pick on North Dakota. It's easy.
it's way out there.
Yeah.
But the point is, by privatizing the entire VA system, which as you just mentioned, I don't see that working very smoothly.
No, neither do I. I can't imagine. You know, there's hospitals like here in Ann Arbor and Seattle and Portland, San Francisco, Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know, I mean, there's some really, really outstanding hospitals. Mm-hmm. And then there's other hospitals that, you know, just they haven't kept up, I guess, for lack of a better phraseology.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the interesting things you mentioned earlier on before we came into the studio was if you're a medical doctor and you graduate from a prestigious medical school, where do you want to go practice?
Well, and that was posed to me by a friend about 20 years ago when he said to me, if you were a doctor, where would you want to practice? And it really doesn't make any difference if you're from Harvard or Southern right. Illinois University Medical School. You know, you've got a family or you want to go someplace where you can find a wife.
You're going to get to go somewhere where you can find some money.
Yeah, and money, yes.
Where you're going to be able to, you know, utilize your skills and so forth and be rewarded for your skills.
Right.
And I guess I should have prepared more, because I do not know what a regular, you know, a VA doctor makes. I'm sure it's competitive. It has to be competitive.
It's competitive, and remember that VA doctors don't have to pay malpractice insurance. They don't have to, most of them don't have to work weekends. It's actually a civilized form of medicine.
I know. My primary care physician has been able to raise her family by being at the VA, and she said she could never do that in a private hospital.
No, and my primary care physician is also on the faculty of the University of Michigan, and she supervises the residents. And I mean, I lucked out and got, you know, the cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
She's phenomenal. You're not always going to find that in other VAs.
We hear the horror stories.
Yeah.
And we understand the horror stories. So my question is going to be, where do you see this going? I know that the current administration is talking about, or you know, implying that they want to privatize the whole system.
Well,
and I'm not sure how they're going to do that, especially in a short amount of time.
And we have an organization called Concerned Veterans of America, who is lobbying, very consciously lobbying. By the way, they're underwritten by the Koch brothers, or Koch brothers, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, that wants to see the VA privatized. You know, they feel that the VA is depriving insurance companies and doctors and pharmaceutical companies of their due profits. You know, you could never take the efficiency of the VA and you know, the VA system ought to be a role model for HMOs and doctor groups to try to emulate, not to take away from.
Well, I think the VA system really is it's a very effective HMO, because you can go, everything is contained, it seems like, especially I would guess in the larger VA hospitals. Now, maybe the smaller ones, as you mentioned, in North Dakota or wherever they might be.
Danville, Illinois.
May not have all the facilities that we have, you know, here or in Philadelphia or in New York and so forth.
Right, right.
Where you go to see your primary care and they've noticed something and they go, hey, I don't like the looks of this. You need to go to cardiology. And they take you down the hall.
Well,
and you're right there.
I'll give you a very specific case. For years, I had really high blood pressure and depleted, what's in bananas?
Potassium.
Potassium, really low potassium levels. I was on potassium supplements and five blood pressure medications. I come here, and my primary care doctor goes, I remember when I was in med school about this thing called Kahn syndrome, and I thought he was pulling my leg. It was actually a Dr. Kahn at the University of Michigan in the 1950s who recognized that when your adrenal glands are affected in adverse ways, it raises your blood pressure and make a long story short, went through a series of tests. They took out my right adrenal gland, and my blood pressure regulated itself. Mm-hmm. My potassium level regulated itself. Now, I'd been a patient of the VA for 20 years before that, or longer than that before that, and, you know, I'm doing okay.
Well, I think so. And for those of you that are out there listening to this, we're just talking about the possibility of privatizing the VA hospitals and their services. And, you know, we want to know what your opinion is. So give us a call if you got something you want to say. It's 734-822-1600. Are you from here, Michael, originally, from this area?
No, actually, I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, but I'm a transplant post-military service to the Ann Arbor area.
Yeah, I know how that goes. So you're dealing with that. Is there a VA hospital in Grand Rapids, or is it Battle Creek?
CBOC. No, there is a community-based outpatient clinic there, and actually it's one of the newer ones. They built a newer, more state-of-the-art facility. It's in Wyoming, which is right outside of Grand Rapids. It's within the Grand Rapids metropolitan area. And they service quite a few counties and veterans there, and they're affiliated with the Battle Creek VA Medical Center.
Okay. All right. So what do you think we should be doing?
Well,
what can we do?
You know, personally, I try to remain as apolitical as I can, but we can't let the VA be privatized. It's counterintuitive. It's not logical. It's not cost-effective. You know, yeah, there's some places that need to be revamped or closed or new facilities built or research or, you know, put some new ideas on the board, like putting a VA doctor, his nurse, and his case manager in a private sector setting instead of, you know, you might not have a community big enough to build a whole CBOC, but one or two doctors with their staff, you know, would work well. We've got to think outside, you know, and the veteran population isn't decreasing. You know, as long as we keep having these silly wars, and they're costing so much, both in money and in lives, and the aftermath of those wars in terms of PTSD and TBIs and, you know, alcohol dependency and drug usage and everything that comes along with the baggage of combat, we've got to be able to recognize those people need treatment.
I was thinking when you were mentioning that, the idea that the men and women who are surviving their injuries in today's world, their medical bills are going to be astronomical.
Yes.
And so who is going to pay that? I mean, if we go to privatization and we end up the cost of going to, you know, the premier medical facilities around the country is going to be astronomical as well.
Right.
And I don't know how you – I don't have a solution, but I'm just trying to anticipate what some questions might be is, well, if we have private insurance, right, but we got to pay for the private insurance. Are you going to provide us with the premiums to pay for – a private insurance policy that where it is right now, we can go to the VA, and if we're 100%, we don't pay.
Well, actually, if you're above 30%, you don't pay anything.
Okay.
So
we have to talk to them about that.
Yeah.
Because I get bills. But the point is that, I guess the question is, how do we take care of all of these men and women who were exposed to stuff, answering the call, that the I don't know if you folks can hear that, but there's kind of a hum that's coming through our headset.
It's Dale's indigestion.
It's my indigestion, or it's my whatever. But the point is that you know, how are we going? The question, I guess, would be, how are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for people to go to private facilities when the cost is so much higher?
Well, and if you go to a private facility, let's say I go to a private doctor. In Jackson, Wyoming, you know, I've worked up there. I go to a private doctor, And I've been having nightmares and you know,
the typical things.
Yeah, you know, paranoia, you know, just all the things that go along with that vacation I took 50 years ago. And I see a doctor, and he goes, "Oh, you're depressed. Let me give you some Prozac." Mm-hmm. He's clueless. They don't understand. You need doctors that recognize what their veteran population has gone through and is going through right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree, and it'd be nice if they would. Maybe I should answer that survey that they sent out.
Oh, and please, for veterans, when you get those surveys, please, please answer those, because mm-hmm. that directly correlates to funding that the VA gets and mm-hmm. how the VA hospitals are rated.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I didn't pitch it, so I looked at it.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. Those surveys are very important.
Well, they actually rate the service.
Well, you know, it's important to recognize that what folks are discussing relative to privatization is kind of coming on the heels of what happened out in Phoenix and the Congress mm-hmm. trying to respond to that and make sure that services for veterans were available, because ultimately the VA healthcare system is a healthcare provider and not an mm-hmm. insurance system, which is one of the things that a lot of people forget about. But I guess with choice, it's again making sure that veterans who cannot get the care that they need at a VA facility can get it out on the economy, and the VA still pays for it. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing.
Yes.
And then, of course, if they're not able to get in for an appointment within a specific time, then they're allowed to go see a private provider, and again, the VA pays for it. I think that's about as far as I would want it to go.
Yeah,
because other than that, I agree. You know, there's other people out there with post-traumatic stress disorder. There's other civilians out there with diabetes and mm-hmm. Parkinson's disease and all the different types of ailments that we as veterans have or acquire or get. But it's the way we got it that makes us
– sets us
that
apart.
That sets us apart.
Right.
You got diabetes maybe because of a bad diet or mm-hmm. whatever. You know,
Or hereditary.
And then our veterans population, or at least our Vietnam veterans, got it because they were exposed to herbicides and dioxins and all that garbage that we spray to defoliate the jungle. You know, again, you know, you may have post-traumatic stress disorder from some other trauma in your life, but our combat veterans and veterans of the military service have their post-traumatic stress disorder directly linked to specific types of trauma.
Right.
So that, or and, traumas. It's not
traumas,
just one
exactly,
trauma.
Or traumas. Yeah. Yeah. And we have a group of physicians, and not only them, but the entire support staff, your social workers, your administrative staff. Not only are, in many cases, these people veterans themselves, but they chose to work at VA facilities because they have a heart for us. And
right.
Okay. Well, I have to end this.
Okay.
For this week, we'll come back at the end of next month. We're going to continue this thing where we talk about the VA and benefits and everything along those lines. I want to announce our winner for our jacket this year, this month. And we've got 141 people that's sent in a request.
70.
Number 70 is Eddie Robinson, North Little Rock, Arkansas. He was a primary technician in the Air Force, medic. Thanks a lot. Eddie will be in touch with you and get your U.S. Wings Buffalo leather jacket out to you as soon as we can. So the next week, we'll be back again here on Veterans Radio. Until then, you are dismissed.